Some roads don't look dangerous. They don't look like a place where a girl can disappear. They look ordinary. Two lanes of blacktop, cornfields, ditches, telephone poles, weeds along the shoulder, a bridge over dark water, the kind of road people drive every day and never think twice. Route 116 near London Mills, Illinois was one of those roads. In July of 1983, a 17-year-old girl named Kimberly Dawn McClaskey was trying to get home. She was from Canton, Illinois. She was small, shy, and pregnant, 7 or 8 months along, depending on which report you read. Far enough that her family had baby clothes ready. Far enough that it wasn't some future idea anymore. The baby was coming. Kimberly had been visiting relatives in London Mills. Then she left to return home to Canton. 12 miles, that was all. One hot summer day, one rural road, one pregnant teenager trying to make it back home. And then she vanished. Not in a city, not at night, not in some place people already feared. She vanished in broad daylight in rural Fulton County. The next thing the world gave back was not Kimberly. Here was her clothing, her personal belongings, photographs, one shoe, a purse. Items found in and along Spoon River near Indian Ford Bridge, south of London Mills. Some were on the bank, some were floating in the water. But there was no Kimberly, no body, no baby, no answers. Just a river, a road, and a mother whose life had just been ripped apart. This is American Dread, true stories of tragedy and terror from the dark side of American heartland. I'm your host, Adam White. American Dread is part of the American Hauntings Podcast Network. Today we're going to Fulton County, Illinois, to Route 116, to Indian Ford Bridge, to the Spoon River, and to the story of a pregnant 17-year-old girl who disappeared on her way home and came back decades later as bones, DNA, and a homicide ruling. This is the story of Kimberly Dawn McClaskey. Kimberly was born June 15, 1966 in Peoria, Illinois. By the summer of 1983, she was 17 years old and living in Canton, Illinois. She had brown or blondish brown hair, hazel eyes, and was described as small, about 5'1" or 5'2". Some reports said she weighed around 98 pounds. But Kimberly's life was already heavy. Newspaper accounts say she became pregnant after being sexually assaulted. Some reports said two men were involved and they assaulted her in a cemetery. Her mother later said that the men had been prosecuted and that one of them had been released from prison before Kimberly disappeared. That is an ugly detail, but it matters. Because Kimberly was not just a pregnant teenager in trouble. She was a child who had already survived something awful. And according to her family, she still had plans. She planned to have the baby. She planned to go back to school, and she planned to graduate. Her family had gathered baby items. They were preparing for a difficult life. But it was still life. There was still a future. Then came July 13th and 14th, 1983. Kimberly went to London Mills to visit relatives. One early report said she had been staying with her cousin Willis Gerard. Some family members say she may have gone for a carnival or a local celebration. Before she left, she reportedly told her younger sister Brenda not to worry. She said she would be home. Those words are nothing until they become the last words. On July 14th, Kimberly was last seen walking or hitchhiking eastbound along Illinois Route 116, about a half a mile to a mile east of London Mills. She was trying to get back to Canton, a 12-mile trip. That was the distance between Kimberly and her home, and somewhere on that road, something happened. By about 3 o'clock that afternoon, Fulton County officials were notified by some fishermen that they had found belongings near the Spoon River. The location was Indian Ford Bridge, southwest of London Mills. Personal papers, photographs, clothing on the riverbank, clothing floating in the water. Later reports said a shoe and a purse were found. One article mentioned items caught on a logjam south of London Mills. Another said Kimberly's jeans were found floating in the river. There was also something missing. A duffel bag Kimberly had reportedly been carrying was never found. That makes this scene even darker, because if she ran away, why leave her clothes in the river? Why leave photographs behind? Why leave one shoe? Why leave the belongings a pregnant teenager would need? And where the hell did the duffel bag go? Police searched the river by boat. They searched from air. They dragged the Spoon River. but the area was rough. Later articles described tall weeds, thick brushes, and riverbanks hard to search. It was the kind of place that you could hide evidence, hide a body, and swallow the truth for years. At first, authorities had considered the possibility that Kimberly had ran away. Reports said that she had done it before, but this did not look like a normal runaway. Girls who run away do not usually leave their clothes floating in a river. They do not usually vanish 8 months pregnant with one shoe missing. Even then, authorities said foul play had not been ruled out. Within weeks, the papers said the police had no leads. Kimberly was gone. The river had given back pieces, and her family was left staring at the water. This story is not only about Kimberly, it's also about her mother. Elizabeth Murphy, also named in earlier reports as Elizabeth Drakeman, did not stop looking. She called agencies, she pushed police, she contacted the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. Kimberly's photos were placed on posters and flyers, and in 1985, her image was set to appear on milk cartons distributed through 140 convenience stores in Ohio. That is how missing children haunted America in the 1980s. Not through Facebook, not through live streams, through milk cartons. You open the refrigerator, reach for the milk, and there was a child's face staring back. Have you seen me? For Elizabeth, it was hope and torture at the same time. She once said getting the material about Kimberly was overwhelming. It felt like a part of her was out there. That may be the truest sentence in this whole case. Because when your child is missing, part of you is out there too. On the road, in the river, in every phone call, in every rumor, in every stranger's face. Elizabeth kept gifts for Kimberly. Christmas gifts, birthday gifts. She saved baby items for the grandchild she never met. She wore Kimberly's picture pinned to her clothing. She made scrapbooks. She kept memories like evidence. And one of the most heartbreaking details, she kept an old tape recording of the McClaskey children singing Jesus Loves Me. In the background, Kimberly could be heard laughing. Elizabeth said it was like a thread of her. That is what she had. Not answers, not justice. A thread. By 1992, Kimberly had been missing for 9 years. Her mother helped push for an age-progressed image through the National Center of Missing and Exploited Children. They used photos of Kimberly's parents, siblings, and family traits to show what she might look like at 26 years old. Because even 9 years later, they were still searching for a living woman. Maybe Kimberly was somewhere else. Maybe she had another name. Maybe she was afraid to come home. Maybe someone would recognize her. That word maybe became the family's prison. Tips came from across the country. New York, California, South Bend, Pennsylvania, Lewistown. Every possible sighting reopened the wound. One girl was seen in a car near Lewistown and looked like Kimberly. Police checked the plate. It was someone else. Another dead end. Another heartbreak. Another time Elizabeth had to lose her daughter all over again. By 2001, Kimberly's case was still being featured as a crime of the week. Nearly 18 years had passed. Elizabeth was still asking someone to come forward. She wrote that as long as she had breath in her body, she would keep looking for her precious daughter. That is love. That is grief. And that is a damn nightmare. Unsolved cases attract names. Some are real leads, some are bullshit. Some are monsters trying to make themselves bigger. In Kimberly's case, two names come up again and again. Donald Leroy Evans and William C. Rimbold. Donald Leroy Evans was a convicted murderer who claimed to have killed many people across the country. In 1993, he reportedly told a Mississippi newspaper reporter that he was responsible for Kimberly's death. But the police were skeptical, and they had reason to be. Evans claimed dozens of murders, but reports said he had failed to lead authorities to the bodies in other states. Fulton County Sheriff Dan DeLay did not accept the confession at face value. He held back details and wanted Evans questioned to see if he knew anything only the killer would know. That matters, because a false confession is not harmless. It is another kind of violence. It forces a family to picture their loved one with a monster who may not have been there. Evans belongs in this story, but not as the answer. He belongs as part of the noise. Part of the sickness that gathers around unsolved cases. William Rimbold is different. His name had more local shadow. William was convicted in a brutal murder of Mary Clark in Farmington, Illinois, just a short drive from Canton. And in Kimberly's case, his name surfaced seriously enough that authorities searched a property connected to him. One report said Elizabeth's husband received an unsigned typed note in 1989. The note suggests that because authorities had found out who killed Mary Clark, they should ask about Kimberly at the same location. Authorities later dug up a well at the London Mills property once connected to William. They found nothing. Then there was an even darker report. During the 2007 coroner's jury coverage, Elizabeth said she had received a disturbing phone call shortly after Kimberly vanished. According to the article, the caller mentioned William and how to cut open a pregnant girl. That sentence is disgusting, and to be clear, it is not proof, but it shows why that name haunted this case. An anonymous note, a phone call, a convicted killer, a dug-up well, nothing found. That is what this case became. Not answers, but shadows. In October of 1993, 10 years after Kimberly disappeared, human remains were brought to the Fulton County Sheriff's Department. The story was bizarre and deeply disturbing. A boy had found bones in northern Fulton County years earlier. Some reports said he was 13 when he found them, and he apparently believed they were ancient remains, possibly Native American. So he took them home and kept them for years. While Elizabeth searched, while Kimberly's face went on milk cartons, while tips came in, while the family saved gifts, the bones that may have been Kimberly were not in the police lab. They were not being tested. They were not being compared. They were sitting with a kid who thought they belonged to another time. And in one awful way, they did. They belonged to 1983. The bones were examined by researchers from Dixon Mounds and by the state crime lab technicians. They were believed to be from a Caucasian female in her late teens or early 20s. They had likely been exposed to the elements for 10 years or less. Kimberly had been missing for 10 years. She was 17. The sheriff then contacted Kimberly's mother, Elizabeth. He told her that in all probability, the remains were Kimberly's. That is not closure. That is a knife with polite wounds on it. The remains included at least a skull. Blood samples were taken from Kimberly's family for DNA comparisons, but early DNA testing was not good enough. The results were inconclusive. So after 10 years of waiting, Elizabeth had to keep waiting. Again, not alive, not dead, not confirmed, just maybe. The final identification did not come until 2006. The skull was sent to the University of North Texas. This time, DNA testing worked. The remains were identified as Kimberly Dawn McClaskey. She had been missing for 23 years. She was 40 years old on paper, but she never got to be 40. She stayed 17 forever. 17 on Route 116. 17 in the school photo. 17 on a milk carton. 17 in her mother's memories. 17 in the background of an old tape laughing. Private graveside services were arranged at Whitechapel Memory Gardens in Canton, but the burial is not justice. A grave gives a family somewhere to stand. It does not tell them who did it. In 2007, the Fulton County coroner's jury reviewed Kimberly's case. The former sheriff testified. The jury heard about Route 116, the Spoon River, the clothing, the personal effects, the milk cartons, the dead-end leads, the skull, the failed DNA, the final identification. Then came the detail that changed the case officially. Forensic scientists found blunt force trauma to the nasal bridge. The damage invaded the skull. Kimberly had not simply disappeared. She had not simply died. Her death was ruled a homicide. Elizabeth Murphy was allowed to speak. She said her daughter was 8 months pregnant. She called Kimberly a beautiful child, and she said Kimberly did not deserve what happened to her. That is the case, stripped down to the bone. A beautiful child, pregnant, trying to get home, killed, and no one held responsible. Here it is, 2026, 43 years later. We still don't have the answers. Who picked her up? Who killed her? Where did she really die? Was she taken from Route 116? Was she killed near the river? Were her belongings thrown into the Spoon River to fake a runaway or an accident? Did she know the killer? Was the attack connected to her pregnancy? Was one of the names that surfaced over the years part of the truth? Or did the real killer never make the papers? This is the horror of this case. Not just that Kimberly was murdered, but that someone got away with it. Someone watched a family suffer for decades. Someone knew a mother was saving Christmas gifts for a dead daughter, and that person stayed silent. There is one image from this case that stays with me. Elizabeth Murphy standing beside gifts she saved for Kimberly. Christmas gifts, birthday gifts, presents for a daughter who never came home. That image is worse than blood, because it is ordinary. It is love with nowhere to go. A wrapped gift is supposed to mean joy. In Elizabeth's house, it became evidence of a mother refusing to surrender. She saved gifts. She saved baby things. She saved pictures. She saved a tape with Kimberly laughing in the background. She saved whatever she could because the river had taken everything else. And for more than 20 years, she lived between hope and horror. In 1983, Kimberly was a missing girl. In 1985, she was a face on a milk carton. In 1992, she was an age-progressed pitcher. In 1993, she was in all probability. In 2006, she was DNA. In 2007, she was a homicide. But she was always Kimberly, a daughter, a sister, a pregnant teenager, a girl who said she was coming home, a girl who never made it. Somebody killed Kimberly. Somebody ended her life and the life she was carrying. Somebody left her family with a road, a river, a skull, and 40 years of unanswered questions. And that should make you angry, because sadness is not enough. This was not just tragedy. It was a theft. A future was stolen, a baby was stolen, mother's peace was stolen, and the person who did it may have lived for decades with the truth rotting inside them. If someone still knows what happened on or around Route 116 near London Mills, near the Indian Ford Bridge, near the Spoon River, then it is long past time to speak. This has been American Dread, true stories of tragedy and terror from the dark side of American heartland. I'm your host, Adam White. American Dread is part of the American Hauntings Podcast Network. Until next time, keep looking closer, because sometimes the darkest thing in a small town is not the haunted house. It is the road everybody drives by, the river everybody crosses, and the story everybody thinks somebody else remembers.
This episode was brought to you by the American Hauntings Podcast Network.